Why Life Is, and I'm your host, Niles McFlower, and we have another great show dealing with metaphysics and spirituality, science, and the like, and anything else that might come to mind. If you would like to, you could call in, and the numbers are right on screen, so just use one of those if you're in Canada, or if you happen to be in the U.S., you can use one of the 800 numbers. That's always nice. And for the rest of you, well, I guess you can just pay for the call, you know, if you really wanted to. We're going to tonight talk about world karma. I thought it was important to bring this subject up because of what is taking place as we speak in Iran. This is a serious time. This is a serious show to talk about some of the implications, and that's where world karma is going to fit in. I'm going to define it for you in a minute, but with this problem that is actually not just a problem for the Iranians, but for sure it is, but also for the people in their area and for the rest of the world as well. Now, when I talk about karma, I'm not talking about rewards and punishments. That's a lot. Some people think karma is that. Now, if you've listened to some of my earlier shows dealing with karma, you know that isn't what I mean by karma. I'm talking about karma is a cause that is somewhat delayed, and sometimes for a very long time, in having an effect. And that's what I mean by karma, a delay in the effect from some cause. It's like the energy is kind of out there moving around and doing all kinds of weird things, but it doesn't come to bear as an effect for sometimes years or even lifetimes. And that's what I mean by karma. Now, what is world karma in comparison to like individual or national or a group of people's karma? So let me define that. Individual karma is where the effects that are coming from in a delayed fashion from some cause are in the majority, and usually it's the vast majority of the time, coming from an individual. So an individual is creating the causes that is creating the effects which have yet to pop in. Okay? And that's what individual karma is all about. Now, individual karma can be, and oftentimes people think of it as a negative thing. Negative because when you delay an effect, it oftentimes creates forces and problems in people and in events so that it's sort of like the monkey wrench in things. Because it's out of sequence, it isn't exactly connected to the original cause. And that is why most people think of karma as being negative. There actually is positive karma. Positive karma offsets the negative. It makes the negative karma kind of move more in sync with the causes that started it. And it's kind of interesting because most people don't realize that. They think that there's only one thing that can ever happen, and that's bad karma, you know. But good karma can also be created. Usually it's created by thinking ahead and noticing that there was a cause that has yet to take effect. Let me say that again. Good karma comes from thinking ahead, planning, and realizing that there is a cause that has yet to take effect that we as individuals or as groups or as nations or as the world can do something to put more in sync with the original cause. I hope that makes sense to you. Now, I realize all these wild big concepts I throw out there at the beginning of shows usually gets everybody like, what did he say? It sounds cool, but I don't get it, you know. Yeah, so try to stay with me on this, because as we go through the show tonight, you know, if you didn't get it right away, it may come back because I'll be continuing to give examples later on. You know how that is. But today, you know, tonight we're just talking about the concept so that we get a definition. Okay, that's individual. What about a group of people? Not one individual, let's say 10, 20, 100 people who are creating a cause together that produces a delayed effect. That's karma. And that delayed effect is therefore not related to any one of the individuals by them having a majority of the cause. So the majority of the cause has to come in to bear only when you take into account the group as a total. You can see that. Everybody has like 1% out of 100 people. Then it would be literally an equal number shared in the cause that is producing a delayed effect. And again, I want to emphasize, delayed effects are created by the nature of the person or persons or people not taking enough responsibility in a conscious sense. In other words, they're not consciously taking responsibility to cause the karma to join together with itself, to have the effects join with the causes at one time. In a weird sense, what I'm saying is that a lowering in consciousness, which also reduces people's responsibility for what they're doing, causes this business about karma to take place in the first place. So if everybody was really conscious and everybody was really responsible for what they did, there would be none of the karmic things we're talking about. You couldn't have it because the effects would be tied so closely together with the causes. As a matter of fact, time itself is sometimes described in metaphysical words or senses as, this may not surprise you from what I just said, the quality or measure of consciousness that takes place between two or more events. So time goes more slowly and is used up a lot when, I shouldn't say it goes more slowly. To the person experience, it may go by very quickly. But the point is that it actually is being used up. It's being wasted when someone is being irresponsible or some people are being irresponsible and not acting in a very conscious way. Consciousness is like love, inclusiveness. It's all that great stuff. So if you're not very godly in your thinking and then in your actions, you're going to create a lot of karma that may end up being quite negative. Now, you could offset some of that negative karma. And the way you could offset it is by planning and doing virtuous activities that would then, even for your own karma, if it was individual, you could reduce it. Because you'll bring together the effect with the cause. The weird thing about that is you will accelerate the karma. So it's not going to go any slower. It's just that when it comes together, you'll be able to deal with it better. And it'll eventually work out better than if you'll just leave it fester. Now, you're probably scratching your head and said, wow, this is a heavy duty. Okay, I got it. Okay, let me see if I can make it any simpler. Let's go on to national karma. National karma is when the whole nation, as a group of people who identify themselves as functioning as a nation, they do so, not others, it's what they decide, take actions that create effects that are delayed from the causes. Because, again, as a nation now, they're not being very conscious and or together, actually, responsible. And they're not functioning as a virtuous part of the universe. They're not co-creating with their creator. I like that word. And so they are producing a lot of karma, which very likely will turn out to be negative karma, unless they do some pretty radical things to alter that negative karma by making up for it, becoming much more conscious suddenly, and becoming much more, we would hope, responsible. Not to just themselves, because if they're doing this on a national level, it's how they are responsible as a nation to the members within their nation and to other nations. Okay? You got that? All right, and then world karma. Let's talk about world karma. World karma is that all the countries collectively have an effect on each other And that effect comes from usually national karma working its, you know, working your way down all the way to the individual, but national karma still, that is additive to each other country's national karma. So national karma is kind of like a super nation or the world, and it's having an effect on all nations in one way or another, rather than coming from just the center of one nation or two or five or ten. And, you know, some people today might claim, well, if there is global warming, which I believe there is global warming, but that's a whole other story, because it isn't happening right now, so obviously that's a big issue. But the point is that if there's global warming, well, and it's coming from each nation's irresponsibility in some fashion, then that would be a good example, I think, of world karma. Particularly if it became negative, that would be certainly so. But if we work it out in some way, I don't believe in cap and trade. I think it's a bad system completely. But if we work it out in some way, then that would be a good karmic outcome. Okay, so how does this fit in with Iran? Because I kind of started that, you know. And, by the way, as an aside, but it's kind of fitting into this, we're going to be able to go to 15 minutes after the next hour for the show today. So, again, we get an extra 20 minutes or so of show time, which is wonderful, and thanks to, again, this station for providing that. So I'm taking my time, which I know some people have said they really appreciate that. Okay, good. And I get to talk more, which is always great, you know. What the heck? And so, now, well, how does Iran fit into all this? Okay, if you've been following the news, you know, it's their 31st anniversary of their revolution. And a lot of people in Iran are not too happy with their existing government. Why? Because their existing government was supposed to be kind of a benevolent theocracy that was supposed to give power still to the people, but with the idea of Islamic theology becoming part of the laws. Well, as it really turned out, it became a tyrannical dictatorship with a bunch of crazy cuckoos running it who, instead of trying to apply Islamic law to their thinking, they are using Islamic law to gain power and control over the people that they were supposed to be serving. That's not a good thing, is it? And tyranny is a real danger on Earth, our planet. It's one of the ways that evil particularly likes to work on a third ray type planet, which is the kind of planet we have, and that just means that it thrives in a system that relies upon militarism, which our planet somewhat does, and also relies pretty heavily on the ability to develop economies in a relatively fast order that tend to dominate and control. And a lot of other issues that come along with this type of planet that we're on. Now, there's a lot of good things about Earth. A tremendous number, actually. But unfortunately, tyranny is in direct opposition. And it mostly comes out through militarism. But a lot of other, in a lot of other ways as well. And it removes freedom. It removes freedom from the existence of life. It tries to use people's freedom for its own benefits. It converts freedom into power, and power is a third rate kind of thing. So it changes people's freedom into a means of it gaining power over its own citizens, and then eventually over other countries. This is a kind of really sick thing. But it is unfortunate that as much as about a quarter or so of the countries on our planet, and certainly more than that in terms of number of people, are subjected to evil regimes that are converting this First Reich freedom into a militaristic control power thing. And Iran is certainly up there. I mean, is it the worst? Well, I don't know how to compare these because each one has their own means of evil expression. But it's really bad. It is really bad. And in 31 years, they have managed to almost get a nuclear weapon or arsenal. They certainly have the means of delivering weapons of mass destruction to their neighbors, at least. Maybe they couldn't hit us yet. But they're very dangerous people. And when I say people, I'm talking about the government now. I'm not talking about the people of Iran. And the Iranians, who were originally Persians, were some of the most enlightened people on Earth a couple thousand years ago. And it's a shame because they were, even as an earlier nation during the earlier last century and before that, they're some of the most well-educated people in the Middle East. Most of the people in Iran actually go to college. I think it's as high as the United States. So, I mean, there's a strange issue when you look at this because you ask yourself, well, then how is it that a country filled with people who are well-educated but not necessarily enlightened and who act in a way to defy a major country, the United States at that time, to get rid of an oppressive ruler, the Shah, and to try to gain self-reliance, end up with a society ruled by a bunch of thugs and tyrannical people who, under the guise of a religion, are subjecting these people to awful, awful things and are threatening the region and eventually the entire world with weapons of mass destruction, nuclear weapons. What went wrong? You kind of ask yourself if we're going to do kind of a historical idea about this. And where does karma, especially world karma, kind of fit into this? Well, you have to do a little history, and I'll try to not bore you too much with the history. But you got to do some, because otherwise karma doesn't make much sense, since it has to do with the past connecting with the present. In the past, the United States was not the world's most upstanding country. We did some really bad stuff, particularly in the name of fighting various other countries, the Soviet Union, etc. We thought it was okay to subvert the democratic process even in countries where we wanted to get one of their important assets, which in this case would be oil, and also to make sure that they stay on our side and not fall into the hands of the Soviets, who might really need their oil more than we do, which isn't true. But at any rate, this happened in the 1950s. And what happened was that the Iranians, they wanted to get rid of their king, so to speak, and say, well, we want to have ourselves a real democracy. And so they held an election, and they decided that they wanted to put in power someone with somewhat leftist viewpoints, enough so it frightened our CIA and our government. These individuals that were voting into power by no stretch were hardcore communists. They were less communist than the president of the United States is today. But they were certainly for the time not extreme level of capitalists. They were somewhere in between. They were probably no more socialistic than France was at that time. But nonetheless, to us, they're going to go off and they're going to join the Soviet Union bloc or something or whatever. And so what we did was we sponsored a coup, not a revolution, but it wasn't a revolution from the people. It was from us. And we installed the Shah, another king, ruling things, instead of the people they wanted to elect, the person and other people they wanted to elect, who were, the whole election was just like thrown away. Well, you know, you got to think of it this way. If that is the cause, which I'm suggesting it is, along with another 25 years of that sort of behavior on our part, for what we're dealing with today, then it kind of makes a lot of sense. Because these people would be, and I think anyone would be, pretty ticked off if a country comes in who has no business interfering with their elections and undoing a truly democratic election because we don't like the results. I mean, you know, how would you feel about that? Okay? So, nonetheless, those actions, and remember, this is not a single thing. In AD, yes, it was a single thing in the 50s, but we continue to support this process of there not being any more re-elections until the late 70s. You know, when, hey, they finally said they had enough of this. But the world karma is such. Now, this is not just national. I realize it sounds like it's only national because I said the United States. But the fact of the matter is, the whole world let us do it, not just us doing it. I mean, in truth, there were very few countries who really voiced opposition to what we did. Now, some people might, if you're old enough, know or remember that there were objections in the United Nations for our actions. And also in the Security Council of the Soviet Union, definitely objected, you know, because they said, hey, they actually want somebody who might be a little leftist. That'd be cool, you know. But in reality, it was a farce because we had control over what was being done back in those days, pretty much. Also, there were a lot of problems at that time in India and with the people who were Islamic people. So there was a lot of factors where there was prejudice against people of the Muslim faith. And consequently, it was not a good time, politically speaking, connected with religion, for a country to want to have more of an Islamic kind of government. And this also added fuel to the fire. All right. So what I'm telling you is that the whole world was kind of, or most of the world was kind of involved in this in a pretty serious fashion. And we made a real enemy out of a great, great society of people. We made them our enemies. And that was pretty stupid. It also caused us to eventually support Saddam Hussein, because after they had the revolution at the end of the 70s, we then were 100% against the Iranians, and we got Saddam all stoked up with a lot of weapons and stuff, and he was more than happy to create a 3.5-4-year war with them and just kill a whole bunch of Iranians and with using our weapon technology. Of course, we're still paying for that, too, by the way. There's more karma still with that. And that's why we had to end up fighting Saddam Hussein, because we made the tyranny that he created on his own citizenry, and also the force against the Iranian people in a terrible war that we basically encouraged by giving this madman huge amounts of weapons. He was also getting them, strangely enough, from the Soviet Union. Talk about crazy world, huh? And the Soviet Union was also supplying the Iranians with weapons. And so were the Red Chinese. Everybody was, like, you know, more than happy to make a mess out of the Middle East. And I guess they all thought they had a right to do it, because, after all, whose oil is it anyway? All right, so there's a whole bunch of other parts of history I could go into here, but I don't want to. I'm just trying to give you bits and pieces, showing how the United States, particularly, but the whole world, has been involved in messing up the Iranian country and making a government there, ultimately, that is tyrannical. Now you could say, well, didn't the Iranians have the choice after they had the revolution to not bring in a bunch of crazy people like they did and end up where they are today? Well, they sort of had a choice, but then again, not really, because their original choice was to have a democratic society and not the kind of society they have today. And that would have worked just fine, it looks like, if we had minded our own business and not known what we did in the 50s and then carried it through for another 25 years. So I think that it's incumbent at this point to say that the world karma that the Iranian conflict and crisis that is taking place right now, today, is set squarely on our shoulders. And if we're going to do something about it, if we're not going to do something about it, I don't know that the rest of the world will, because although this is world karma, we're probably the only nation that can do something to really make a change. And what is that I'm going to suggest now? Well, I'll get into more of this in the next half of this show, but we still got a good more than 10 minutes to go, so I think I'll start on it because it's kind of complicated. The first thing is we have to recognize that we have really hurt these people. I mean, I think we as a nation, and maybe the rest of the world should recognize this too, that we have created a lot of their problems. And to declare that, well, they're responsible for their own country, even though we went in and took control of their government and did all this other stuff. Well, and then took their oil for probably half or a third of what we should have been paying for it, by the way, for 25 years. I mean, that does that seem like it's right? No, of course not. So what can we do to change this? Well, I have to tell you, the things I'm going to mention are almost 180 degrees from what we're really doing. And that's what's so sickening, is that we aren't making it better, we're making it worse in many respects. Yes, we should be really probably risking some of our own, we'll say, material happiness or goodness to help these people, because we really owe them. And they didn't single-handedly just do this to themselves. What could we be doing right now? I'm going to touch on it, and then, like I said, the rest of the other half of the show will go deeper. First of all, as you may remember, about 8 months ago, there was an uprising in Iran, and our tremendously unenlightened president, I don't care if you don't like me saying that, decided that it would be best that we just leave those people alone. Let's not support the people against their tyrannical government. I mean, why would we do that? The government will just get angry at us, and maybe they'll even take it out on the poor people. So let's leave them alone. Well, that would have been a good thing to do in the 50s, but a terrible thing to do in 2009. What else did we do wrong? We completely, as far as I could see, ignored history. I listened with great intent to see if any of the news stations, some people say, what about Fox? You know, well, they weren't any better than anybody else. Nobody said, well, this problem came about because of what the United States, with some other countries as allies, went ahead and did in Iran in the 50s and then for 25 years after that. It was our fault. Now, does that mean nobody said anything about, oh, yeah, there was something, some PBS once in here and there. And I think even Fox ran a few minutes saying that we had some culpabilities. But, you know, you have to do a lot more than that if you're going to wake people up to karma that they've ignored for 50-some-odd years. We're going to have to do more than that. I mean, after all, we've been totally asleep about this whole issue for a long time. I'm not kidding. This is a serious issue. So it's been festering, and it's really, really bad now. Okay, so we didn't do that. What else didn't we do? Most of you know out there that there is the conflict with Israel. The present leader or leaders, I think probably the plural is better, in Iran say they want to destroy and wipe Israel off the map, and the Holocaust never happened, and, you know, Hitler was their best buddy, and they don't know why people don't like him, and yeah, I don't know, whatever. That, obviously, these are tyrannical, crazy madmen, yes. And, you know, but that rhetoric is going to result in a military strike. Yeah, I know it may not be successful. A lot of people say, oh, Israel's not going to be able to do much against Iran, and they're going to have nuclear weapons besides. You know, I don't think it's going to matter. And I said this a year ago, for those of you who remember, that it's inevitable that it's going to result in a military or a number of military possible strikes against Iran. They're going to do it. And they're going to do it because they don't want to be wiped off the face of the map. You know, they've been there, done that, and they decided they don't want to do it again. Okay? And it kind of makes sense, if you think about it, in that respect. You know? And so, that's going to be a very bad outcome. But yet, despite that looming issue, it's continually, there's some discussion here and there on the news once in a while, but nobody's really saying, well, this is an inevitability. And once it happens, there's going to be a whole domino effect of some serious consequences. Part of it is going to be that the poor Iranian people, not to mention how many Israelis are going to die in this thing, are going to suffer immensely, even if they try to limit casualties to just the quote-unquote the crazies in the government. How can you do that? I mean, seriously, these type of people, they'll go to the schoolhouses. They'll move into suburban neighborhoods. They'll go any place they can to protect themselves by putting innocent people around them. So you can't separate them. And I think that the Israelis would try, but I don't think it's possible. So that's going to have a terrible consequence. And remember, this is world karma, and we're kind of leading the pack on this deal. Are we doing something about this? Not to my knowledge. As a matter of fact, of going back to our present administration, they actually have distanced themselves from the Israelis, thinking, oh, well, if they do something bad, we'll be just distant from them. Besides which, they're on the side of democracy, and our present administration may not be. So they don't really see Israel as an ally anymore. I know that sounds strange, but I'm telling you the way I see it. So what's going to likely happen? Well, we're probably going to have a military conflict. I think it's going to be this year. If it isn't this year, then I'd be surprised, because there's this danger that a workable, crude nuclear bomb could be somehow made by Iran. I'm not saying they could do it today, but I think that they could get it done within a year. And especially if they see what I'm saying is coming, which they should be able to at least see it. I don't know what they're going to do about it for sure. So terrible, terrible things can happen. And does Israel have nuclear weapons? Yep. I believe they have somewhere between 140 and 200 nuclear weapons, but they don't publicly admit to any. So we're looking at some serious issues here, really, really serious. All right, so what other things has this administration, the present one, not done, and also sharing in common? I'm going to go back to the administration before them, because for 8 years, the Bush administration didn't handle this much better. They were at least allies of Israel, and they, I think, if they had had the opportunity to support the Iranian people as this, the president, the Obama administration, had last year and today, I think they would have become more actively involved. Now, I'll get into that again in our next segment. But so that's another failure here. Both administrations, it's not just the last year, it's like 9 years. We've been really on a crazy course here in the way that we have dealt with this whole process. We really should have been helping the Iranian people to find a way of overthrowing the tyranny in their country, because they want that. Now, they may not love us for some time, because we've done some bad things to them. But at least they might respect us. They might say, whoa, those people in the U.S., at least they don't just talk about freedom. They're willing to put their necks out for it. And how should we do this? Every way possible. We should not wait for the United Nations. We should not be dealing with this through, well, we got to get a consensus because Germany wasn't scratching the butt of France last week. And the Chinese, you know, they hold a lot of our money, and you got to forget about all that stuff, and you got to do the right thing. Because if we keep doing the wrong thing, I'm going to tell you what the world karma is going to be. But I don't have time right now to get into it. So I'm going to get into that and where we're headed. Now, this is not just about Iran today. This is about world karma. So I'm going to talk about other issues as well and how it all feeds together and interconnects. But hopefully this is making some sense to you. And, you know, we can change this. We don't have to. There is still some things we can do. No sanctions. Forget about that. That's nonsense. I'll tell you what sort, well, maybe sanctions, but not the sanctions they're talking about. I'll tell you about what we need to be sanctioning. It's pretty scary. We need to really be doing some things that are not very pleasant. Okay. So we will be back in about 2.5 minutes, give or take. And I will continue on with hopefully some more practical issues, talk about some other elements of world karma besides Iran. And it'll be about 2.5 minutes from right now.
Hi, everyone. Since childhood, I've had questions about my life and life in general that I couldn't find adequate answers to. Questions like, why am I here? Why are others here? Does the universe have a purpose? And how does that relate to my life? More recently, I've been wondering what happens when we die, especially the reasons why. I'm more of a doubter than a believer in many things, and answers that include the whys allow me to think and figure out the truth for myself. I've been reading a book, Life's Hidden Meaning. This one book contains more answers, including the whys, than all other sources I've read or heard. It's amazing to me that every one of my questions has been thoroughly answered. More importantly, I have found that all of these answers so far have checked out to be true. I hope this message helps some of you in your quest for better understanding. The name of this wonderful book is, again, Life's Hidden Meaning by metaphysician Niles McFlower. Some bookstores sell it. I got my copy directly from the publisher at agelesswisdom.com. Life's Hidden Meaning may enlighten your mind and bring some peace and joy to your heart.
Hun, what book are you reading?
It's a novel, kind of, about romance, love, and spiritual life in general.
Kind of a novel? What do you mean?
Well, it's based on some real-life experiences and even real characters. Some of their experiences are fascinating and remarkable. I can't put this book down.
How come the title is Afterlife Love?
That's part of the fascination. This book describes the afterlife in intricate detail and even explains why things are the way they're explained.
But how can anyone write about or know that?
Some of the characters travel out of body to some places that people who've already died also go to. I'm finding it completely believable because it all makes sense and fits into a bigger picture for me.
Hon, what happens to these people?
You can read it for yourself when I'm done if you want.
Better yet, I'll get my own copy so we can discuss it while we read. Let me see. I'll write down the title. It's Afterlife Love by Niles McFlower. M-A-C-F-L-O-U-E-R.
Afterlife Love is available in some bookstores and from the publisher at agelesswisdom.com or 480-966-3132. That's 480-966-3132.
Back. This is Why Life Is, and I'm your host, Niles McFlower. Tonight we're dealing with world karma and some of the things that I think are relevant because of the Iranian uprising, which is being thoroughly crunched right now by the tyrannical crazies that run that country. And I hope I wasn't too depressing. I know that to talk about this, of course, if you talk about things that we've done wrong, it's never fun to deal with. But what are some new things that we could do that are kind of radical, off-the-wall stuff that a lot of people don't like? Well, I do believe that we should seize everything that the Iranian government, we have any control over and can get from the Iranian government in any country, including our own, that has any value whatsoever or gives them any kind of control or power. We should then use all that seizure to fund the Iranian people because it's their money and we'll give it back to them. And we should make it a policy, dollar for dollar, that whatever we take from their government, we give to the people so that they can foster an uprising and hopefully free themselves from the shackles of this terrible regime. And we have to do this in a way in which there are no strings attached. The idea that we are going to nation build and tell other countries what kind of government they should have and what kind of people should be running their government, et cetera, is, again, back to the 50s and wrong. We need to give them the same freedoms that we enjoy, which is if we want to put someone crazy in office, which I think we may have done, then go ahead. That's the choice that people make. But hopefully it won't be a reaction from 25 years of subjection on our part. And it'll be their own free choice rather than a kind of radicalized get rid of the bums who we were supporting the Shah and his constituency. Okay, and the many corporations that were in the oil business, also doing the same thing in Iran. And that's the first step. That's, if you want to call that a sanction, that's fine, but I'm saying it's way more than anything anybody else is proposing. I would also put an embargo and a military embargo around Iran. And I would literally sink any ship or airplane that flies off of out of their country to attack us or to attempt to deal with the embargo. Now, the Straits of Hormuz, which is where this would have to take place, we would have to literally declare as a nationalized, Americanized, nationalized world zone that the Iranians can only use. In other words, we're taking over land and water that they claim right now. So it's an act of war. We're going to war with them. And we would have to say to them, you can use it. You can even come across, but as long as you don't have any weapons with you and you're trading in things that we're not preventing from our embargo from going into the country. Now, what would we prevent from going into the country? Food? No. Medical supplies? No. How about weapons? Yeah. How about anything that the government is gaining power from through its trading or sale? Now, there's probably a list of a zillion things. I can't really go into all this because I don't even know what they are. but we could certainly figure this thing out. And you could say, well, but he always punishes the people because the government will just try to, you know, keep it from the people. Well, if that happens, we did this in East Germany for, you know, over West Berlin. We'll just start dropping food on the people, you know, give them what they need. And we'll saturate the country with their needs, including weapons. And make sure that there's so much of it, the government has no, you can't stop. And you could say, well, if you start dropping things, could they shoot us out of the sky? I don't think so. We've got quite a few weapons to deal with whatever they've got. And if we had to, we'll take out their missile sites, you know. I'm saying that basically we have to go to war with these people, but it's going to be a kind of strange war. It's not going to be a war where we're putting boots on the ground. Oh, we might send over a few of our drones. We've got a lot of those. I guess they're making them like, you know, as fast as they can do it. And actually, drones would be much more effective in Iran than they are in Pakistan or Afghanistan. Isn't that strange? Because of the fact that the country, the way it is laid out, lends itself a little bit more to that kind of weapon use. And you could say, well, they're going to just declare all-out war. So, okay, let them do it. What difference does it make? What else can, I mean, they don't have the power to do almost anything. Oh, well, they'll send people into Iraq where we have, they're not going to send people into Iraq because, you know what, this is world karma, it's not U.S. karma. When we start doing this, other people are going to get really shook up. The United States is really kicking butt. And we are going to force, in effect, other people to take a stand, including the Israelis. And will Iraq fight? Yeah, if they have to. We don't want to create a war. We want to prevent one. This is the weirdest thing I know. You're going to say, well, how can you prevent a war by declaring or sort of having an undeclared war on someone? Well, that's the truth. That's sometimes what you have to do. You've got to use greater force against the real cause of the problem. The cause of the problem is not the Iranian people, per se. I mean, some of those people are in the government and they're in the military, and those are the bad dudes. But that's where the force has to be directed, is at the government and the bad dudes, not the rest of the people. And we have to be able to define the difference by our own actions and not by some declaration. I know this sounds crazy. I might have a few years ago thought it was nuts myself. But I don't think we're going to have any other choices, because if we don't do something that produces good karma, the bad karma that's going to come out of this is the Iranians are going to get nuclear weapons within the next 2 or 3 years or less. They're going to stick them on a whole bunch of rockets, and they're going to start shooting them off at Israel, at our ships in the Gulf. They're going to drive us into a war anyway, and then it'll be on their terms, and they'll have nuclear weapons. Okay? What's the next step that I suggest? Well, in cooperation with the Israelis, since they have such a vested interest, I would take out all their nuclear production sites using some new type of weapons that are like bunker-busting bombs that are almost nuclear but not quite, and that can go very, very deep and even destroy the 100-feet-deep concrete steel-reinforced facilities that they've built. In other words, we can do it. We have the ability. And so do the Israelis. And these weapons are not mass-produced yet, but we can make them in a short time, and we can do it. And so we just wipe out their ability to make nuclear weapons. And so you can't deal with an evil like is happening in Iran by sitting down at a table and having tea. It's not going to work. We've been trying that 31 years, I guess. But it's not going to work. Not going to work at all. The only thing that's going to help is to get the majority of the people, at least if they're not on our side, at least against the government and willing to fight against the government, which would sabotage the government's ability to wage war anyway. They could wage war at a distance. They could launch planes or missiles, but they're not going to be able to mass an army great enough to take over the region. Not today, anyway. Now, the other thing that we need to do is we need to make a kind of a, this is also going to sound very crazy, along with the rest of the world now, this is world karma we're talking about, we need to make it absolutely a straight up that we're not going to allow any more nuclear proliferation, period. And this is not a business like, oh, it's one country, pick your country, who are you going to allow to have nuclear? Now, this is going to be no more nuclear weapons, period. I'm not talking about disarmament. I'm saying, and this is another crazy idea you might think, I'm suggesting forget about disarmament. It's impossible. There's a logic behind it that you can't do it. But instead, the countries that have all the nuclear weapons say, okay, you may not like it the rest of the world, but what we've decided is we're not allowing any more countries to ever get nuclear weapons, and before you have them, we'll bomb the crap out of you. And that's the end of it. If that's what you want, that's what we're going to do. No more nuclear weapons because it threatens everybody. Yes, we will continue to try to disarm, and maybe there will be a reduction in nuclear weapons, but we're not going to make our decisions based upon us disarming before the rest of the world becomes nuclearized. Okay, you say, wait a second. I thought this was supposed to be a spiritual show. You're talking about, you know, talking about bombing people and doing crazy stuff. Well, I'm trying to avoid the potential of a nuclear world war. Where are we really heading in terms of the world karma as things stand right now? That's where we're heading. A nuclear world war. How could that be? Well, if you have countries like North Korea and Iran and 20 others, who, including Venezuela, who knows what that guy's going to do, right? Well, he probably won't do anything to the United States because he wants to be able to visit his friend Obama as much as he can. But still, he's a dangerous guy, right, Chavez? And who knows who else? I mean, Cuba, I can imagine. Everybody, they're all going to have nuclear weapons. Just think about what that means in terms of how they aren't going to go after the United States, no, because that would be suicide. But what's to prevent them from saying, hey, Brazil, number one economy in the West, great growing, it should become a satellite nation of Venezuela. And we have a nuclear weapon. If you don't like it, we're going to nuke Rio. That'll fix your bid for the 16 Olympics. Real good. You see, you can't stop tyranny. It's an infestation, and it will grow. And as long as they have the power, they'll use it. It's inevitable. It's only a matter of time. And one nuclear exchange will lead to more. And if you think about it, do you really believe all the nations in the Middle East are going to sit by while the radical Iranians get nuclear weapons? Does that make any sense? The Iranians right now are in bad shape economically, while the other tyrannical governments there, which have been somewhat supported by us, they have tons of oil and other things that they have been able to build a strong economy on. And not to say Iran doesn't, they just aren't able to develop it because they don't run their government, they don't run their economy right. But can you see what I'm talking about? They're all going to say, well, I got to get nuclear weapons because they got nuclear weapons. And everybody's going to get nuclear weapons. And it's going to be a crazy, crazy time. Heck, I can see the North Koreans supplying them all. I really can. Those nutcases would probably have auctions every second Tuesday, you know? Hey, have you gotten your nuke this week? If you haven't, bid. They're real bargains to be had. So we're moving in a very seriously bad direction. There are other major catastrophes that are awaiting us, yes, including desertification and starvation. And all these things will push people to do radical things. By doing radical things with a machine gun or a hand grenade is one thing, but pushing a button and delivering a nuclear bomb is a totally different animal. Neither are good. But the nuclear bomb is going to kill millions and possibly billions of people. Okay, so I'm suggesting some radical ideas here. Radical ideas for a radically bad situation. The climate politically couldn't be worse in the United States right now for any of these ideas with the present administration. So it's not likely to occur, and that is going to be a really serious problem. Do we have another few years? Maybe. I don't know. Will the Israelis take the initiative and retard this whole thing? Possibly. It still doesn't solve the problem for the rest of the world and the karma that's coming about. Tyranny is a form of evil that is in about one-fourth of all the countries on Earth right now. And so we have to be concerned that our planet is going bye-bye. We're going evil. And it's not getting better. It is definitely getting worse. If you count the number of countries in which tyranny exists, there were fewer of them 15 years ago than today, especially if you include some of the countries in Africa. So we have to be very concerned that this whole thing is slipping away from us. And we're moving in a negative karmic direction. What can we do? Leaving aside now, I'm not going to deal anymore with just the Iranian issue. What can we do about tyranny? How can we change this terrible dilemma? And besides the things that I've already said about Iran, which I think have some merit to be considered, we also need to look at how do we promote freedom. And the first is the United States is the leading country in the world. So as goes the U.S., shall go the whole world to some extent. Well, there's countries that hate us, but we still have tremendous influence over them. And we need to make sure that we get rid of the corruption that is leading us into a tyrannical government. We have terrible corruption, and we need to rid this country of corruption on every level that we possibly can. And each of us has some responsibility in this. You should look for and understand where corruption exists in all walks of the government and everywhere, and work in some way to help eliminate it. The best way is probably vote the bums out, but you can't always do that, you know, in some circumstances. Right now, the group I'm associated with is dealing with corruption in the court system in the state we exist in, which is Arizona. And it's really bad. It's not just a single judge, although there's one particularly that I have a great disliking for. But there's a group of them, you could say. And the corruption is serious. It's serious enough that in its own right, it could diminish the freedoms of quite a few people, and it could bring about a kind of infestation that grows and grows, and who knows where it will end. But beyond just the small thing I just mentioned, our whole national government system is highly corrupt. And each person can carefully vote for people who are honest. we may need to change our system a bit. I think that there does need to be term limits. The original concept being a professional kind of person who is so knowledgeable would be better to be, quote-unquote, running things than just have any old person. Well, I think we need a better control on the situation because of money in politics, which is the grease of the corruption. The person who is most corrupt is also the person most likely to get reelected. And that you can't break the cycle, you see. So the best way is term limits of severity. I mean, you know, like a couple of times and that's it, that's all you can be in Congress. And the same thing with the Senate. I mean, we put term limits on the presidency. And so this would be helpful. This would be a step in the right direction. It would require, of course, a change in the Constitution. We have to be careful because our Constitution is really important and it's being greatly neglected. So we don't want to do too much changing on the Constitution because right now it's barely listened to anyway. So that's part of the corruption, to ignore the Constitution and the rights of the people so that abuses of power can be managed and then people can gain. The corruption is not just to gain money, it's to gain influence and power. And we need to stop it right here and clean up our act so the rest of the world can look at us as a shining beacon against tyranny. They don't see that now. And it's about as bad as it's, I mean, it's really terrible. And people say, well, like the Republicans, Bush, they really made enemies out of a lot of people because they were so arbitrary and arrogant in the way they handle other countries. I agree with that 100%. But they're also corrupt in their own problems, right? And they didn't care. So we just got more of this tradition going on here. Corruption's got to go, guys. And we have been corrupt for a long, long time. I don't know if there was really a time when we absolutely weren't corrupt, but it's gotten very bad. And we're destroying ourselves economically because of the corruption. Some of it's coming because the present administration wants to gain power more than money, but both it uses money to gain the power, but it's much more ideological, and so it seeks power more than it does money. That's even more dangerous, by the way. And that's another reason that we need to look at some maybe changes in the Constitution. I think we need a more direct representative government. I talked about one possible simple solution, which was to have a internet-run election system. But we also can vote on major issues. And if a quorum or a majority of people don't vote on a major issue, then we have our normal people in government doing so. But if the majority of people decide that they would rather vote on the issues directly, then those people that we today call senators, congressmen, etc., become nothing more than advisors. And the people of the administration are nothing more than, we'll say, functionaries who are there to make sure that the will of the people are carried out, but they can't change what we decide. I think that's a better system, and it's a more direct democracy. The dangers used to be thought that the masses would run things because people were basically uneducated and not that conscious. A couple hundred years ago, there's some argument for that. Not today. Not today. Not in this country. I think that we, if we took the reins and chose to run our system of government that way, many people would respect us a good deal more, and we would get rid of the corruption. And I don't know very easy or simple ways to do that, except to do what I'm suggesting, get rid of the corruption. So this is critical. It's very important. And what else? Well, we need to work with other countries to develop ways for all people to increase their freedom of choice in their life. And instead of working with other countries to limit freedoms, which is what intergovernment actions usually are, by the way, we should do the reverse. We should ignore intergovernment policies that do not increase the freedoms of all the peoples in all the countries that we're involved with and interacting with. And that should be a general policy stance for our country. That would also build a bridge to the peoples of other nations. It may not make us really popular with some of the other governments, because some of those governments are highly socialistic or this or that, and they want great power. And that's going to just tick them off, because it will reduce their power. It'll expose their desire to control and manipulate, and to take money from people to gain more power. What's some other things that we should be doing? Well, I don't know if you're aware of this, but last week the administration decided that it was going to limit our space program. I think that's a big mistake, but I'm not so sure that just going to the moon is the answer anyway, although going to the moon may be important for another reason in an economic sense, because there's a thing called helium-3. Normal helium is helium-4. It has to do with the number of electrons and protons. But helium-3 is a kind of radicalized version of helium. And the only source of it in any great quantity besides the sun and Jupiter is our moon. And it's on the surface soil, in the surface soil of the moon, mixed with certain elements, you know, like titanium and other things. And if we had a lot of this material, could try to build a reactor. Nobody's actually done it because we don't have enough material to see if we can do it. That would power the entire planet for literally a song, almost nothing. And other countries are seriously concerned about going to the moon for that purpose, but we decided last week that we're going to do it. Now, I could understand that it's, you know, it's 10 years in the future and maybe it's not worth our time to consider right now. But that's only part of it. We have to have challenges that we reach for as a nation in order to encourage us to be creative in ways that are virtuous. And when we let down on these things, we tend to become complacent and non-creative, at least in virtuous ways. And that's what I'm worried about. I'm more worried about its effect on the psychology and the spirituality of the people than just a question of whether we can get some helium-3, or whether we're going to have this part of the moon be ours or somebody else's. I think it's really more about the overall picture. Nations in the past that were great exploring nations prospered. And the ones that chose not to shrank and became oftentimes weak. And sometimes they fell into a darker state. So it's something to consider for a number of reasons outside of the, you know, the more mundane issues that a lot of people talk about. And should we go to Mars? Yeah, but not the way that necessarily was originally suggested. There's a lot of options we have. And all these ways of using technology for the benefit of exploration can also benefit humanity. And we may find solutions for all kinds of problems that exist in the world. That doesn't mean we should ignore Earth to go to Mars. I'm not suggesting that. We've got a lot of problems here, and we should be working on solving them, that's for sure. All right, well, we're running out of time. There's a whole bunch of areas I want to talk about in terms of world karma, but we didn't get to all of them. What about the question of supporting a free exchange between nations in terms of both education and in terms of medical accomplishments, et cetera, and in terms of helping people to grow more food and to be able to heal themselves from terrible diseases that we have better ability to do. We could be doing all these things and doing them in ways that helps those nations to develop themselves rather than just giving them. I mean, if you give someone a bunch of penicillin, say, here's some penicillin, it'll make you feel better. But they don't know how to produce it themselves. They don't really know how to use it, so we have to even tell them how to use it and when and how. And they're not educated enough to keep themselves healthy. That penicillin may actually be hurting them when we think we're helping them. That's just an example. Okay, well, there's a lot more to say about that, but again, I'm running out of time on that subject. So there's so much more we can be looking at that we need to be thinking about how we can improve the world karma by planning ahead and thinking of ways that as a country and interrelatedly with other countries, we can head off the problems that are coming our way. Also, I believe totally in a free market system with the only caveat that anti-monopolistic and anti-manipulating of markets, there are lots of that we've seen happening, laws be thoroughly enforced. Those should be enforced internationally, not just nationally. But all other elements of economy should be free because right now, with the state of human beings, it's only through merit that human beings can get the gumption up to be creative and eventually find even higher reasons to be creative, like virtue and God. But if we don't allow people to live in a meritocracy, then ultimately, as every economy has in the past that has prevented that, we will end up with a failed country and a failed economy, and it will affect the entire world and we'll be in a terrible, terrible state. And we're moving in that direction almost daily against a meritocracy. Every time you hear of social justice and you hear about people seeking to redistribute wealth, they are against the meritocracy, meaning that you get what you deserve based upon your efforts in creation and toil and work. Okay, we're out of time. So just let me mention that if you have a chance and you're in the Phoenix area, go to Mesa Fiesta Borders and listen to Mimi talk about the seven rays, the seven cosmic rays. And she'll be doing that from 7 p.m. to 8:15 p.m. And when? This Monday, February 15th, 1361 South Alma School Road. If you're in the neighborhood, drop in, no charge, and you get to talk and discuss things. And I also want to mention that if you haven't tried Ideal Absorption Resveratrol, give it a shot. Contact Forever Young Products at 800-777-7850. That stuff works. I use it every day. Okay, well, yes, we are out of time. So I hope this show has made some sense. I know some of it is controversial. I was surprised nobody called me and yelled at me. But I'm sure I'll get some emails. That's okay. You can email me. I don't mind. And you can even say bad things about me if you didn't like what I said. All right. Until next week, this has been Niles McFlower for Why Life Is.